It's lovely to see you. It's lovely to get the opportunity again to share on the subject of the community of healing and renewal. The slide that's up just now is what we titled this whole series. So if you've not been around, then this is what we've been preaching through for the last few weeks. The idea that what we're doing is building on what matters most. And we did that because we started off this series with the very heart of what we believe about what God has called us to do here, which is the heart of prayer and worship, right at the very centre, that red-hot centre that equips and enables everything else. And we're going to come back to that again this morning. For those of you who haven't been around, if you have been around, the next slide is the urban monastery. So as a church here, we feel and have felt for a number of years that this is the direction that God was leading us in, that we were called to establish an urban monastery here, a place that would be about equipping and teaching, a place that would be about healing and renewal, a place that was a mission base, a place that was a centre of creativity, but also that was all, everything was fueled by what matters most. It was fueled by our closeness to God in that place of worship and prayer. And really that's what we've been talking about over the last few weeks. And we've visited the mission base and we've thought about that. We've thought about the Centre for Creativity. And this week we're on to the community of healing and renewal. And I want to say to you that the thing that I found really interesting about this is that the part that's about healing and renewal is called the community of healing and renewal, which I thought was really, really interesting. So it's the community of healing and renewal. And I want to suggest to you that the reason it's called the community of healing and renewal, because it's about a movement rather than a location. So it's not about a thing that everybody comes to, which is where healing and renewal is. It's actually about a movement of people that carry healing and renewal. And that really takes us into a wee bit of kind of church history and a bit of Greek and all the rest of it. It's about ecclesia rather than church. And so if you trail through church history, you'll see that the Greek that's used, that's translated as church in the New Testament, is actually the word ecclesia. And the ecclesia is actually about a gathering of people that gather and then go and then gather and then go. And that changed over the course of time after Constantine and the Roman Emperor was converted to Christianity. And Christianity became an institution much more than a movement of people. And it took on a whole new look. It took on a whole new kind of emphasis, a whole new feeling. And then eventually the word changed and it became a word that came from Germany that it was translated as church. And church actually has much more of a connotation of a place that you can lock the door in. And the thing with ecclesia is that you can't lock the door in the ecclesia. So you can't shut the doors and lock it and come away at night time from the ecclesia, because the ecclesia is the gathering of people who go, who carry something and who are called to carry that thing out into wherever it is that they go. And I want to say to you this morning that if you've been around here for a while, you'll know that we have talked on and off over the last 4 or 5 years about a therapeutic community. We've talked about a therapeutic centre. And I want to say to you this morning that the community of healing and renewal, I believe, is about much more than a therapeutic centre. So it is about a therapeutic centre. So if you haven't been around for the last 4 or 5 years, we've been dreaming about the possibility of one day creating a centre, creating a place that would be a place that would look at holistic healing, that would look at how medicine and how various different emotional therapies, physiotherapy, occupational therapy, all of that thing, how all of that could come together and could actually see healing and renewal come to people who have struggled for years with various things. And that's through conversations with many of you who are medics, who are saying, you know, when people come, as GPs, you're saying to us, is when people come, we know that they need much more than just a script that's a medication answer. We know that, but actually the pressures on the NHS are such that it's really difficult to work out what else you can do. Our dream is that we could someday have a centre where we would have medics who would be able to triage people when they came in and would be able to say, well, actually, it's not a script you need, but there are people over there who will pray with you, or there are people over there who will offer drama therapy or play therapy or family therapy. There are people over there who will do this or that or the next thing. That's actually what you need. Then come back and tell us how you've got on with that, and we'll work out what the next path what the next part of your healing has to be. So we're dreaming about that. And that is a dream. And I realised that over the piece, we've talked about this before, but I was thinking about this week, and I was thinking, if I only talk about that this morning, then there's probably 75% of you in here who will check out, who will think, that's not to do with me, because that's not what I'm called to do, and who could quite easily go to sleep and quite justifiably go to sleep, because it's actually not what it is you're called to do. And that's okay. But I want to suggest to you that the community of healing and renewal is much more than that. And I want to suggest to you too that actually it takes all of us to do that. It's not about a call to being part of the inner healing team. It's not about a talent for anything else, any other kind of discipline or therapy. It's not about coming and joining the healing rooms, guys. Although all of those things are perfectly valid, and if God's calling you to do that, that's great. We would love to talk to you, but it's about much, much more than that. And I want us to think about that this morning. I was saying to Alan on Thursday this week that when I was preparing this week, it felt that this was one of the most challenging things that I've ever spoken about. Not challenging in terms of preparing it, but I felt that what I was doing this morning was, normally I operate much more on invitation than I do on challenge. And this feels uncomfortable this morning for me, because actually this is much more challenge than it is invitation this morning. So I'm learning about how to pitch challenge. And so if I get that wrong this morning, then extend me some grace, because I'm still learning about how to pitch challenge, because I'm not very good at it. So we're going to read from John 11 this morning, and we're going to read from the Message translation. And I'll tell you why later on, because there's a bit in the Message translation that really jumped out at me. So we're going to read from John 11, which is about the raising of Lazarus. I'm going to try and read it off my phone, because the print on my paper is actually too small to be able to see. And yes, I do have my glasses on. So, John 11, and we're reading from verse 1. A man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. This was the same Mary who massaged the Lord's feet with aromatic oils and then wiped them with her hair. It was her brother Lazarus who was sick. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Master, the one you love is so very much is sick." When Jesus got the message, he said, "This sickness is not fatal. It will become an occasion to show God's glory by glorifying God's Son." Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, but oddly, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed on where he was for 2 more days. After the 2 days, he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." They said, "Rabbi, you can't do that. The Jews are out to kill you, and you're going back?" Jesus replied, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in daylight doesn't stumble, because there's plenty of light from the sun. Walking at night, he may very well stumble, because he can't see where he's going." He said these things and then announced, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep. I'm going to wake him up." The disciples said, "Master, if he's gone to sleep, he'll get a good rest and wake up feeling fine." Jesus was talking about death, while his disciples thought he was talking about taking a nap. Then Jesus became explicit. "Lazarus died, and I am glad for your sakes that I wasn't there. You're about to be given new grounds for believing. Now let's go to him." That's when Thomas, the one called the twin, said to his companions, "Come along, we might as well die with him." When Jesus finally got there, he found Lazarus already 4 days dead. Bethany was near Jerusalem, only a couple of miles away, and many of the Jews were visiting Martha and Mary, sympathizing with them over their brother. Martha heard Jesus was coming and went out to meet him. Mary remained in the house. Martha said, "Master, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. Even now, I know that whatever you ask God, he will give you." Jesus said, "Your brother will be raised up." Martha replied, "I know that he'll be raised up in the resurrection at the end of time." "You don't have to wait for the end. I am right now resurrection and life. The one who believes in me, even though he or she dies, will live. And everyone who lives believing in me does not ultimately die at all. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Master. All along I have believed that you are the Messiah, the Son of God who comes into the world." After saying this, she went to her sister Mary and whispered in her ear, "The teacher is here and he's asking for you." The moment she heard that, she jumped up and ran out to him. Jesus had not yet entered the town, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When her sympathizing Jewish friends saw Mary run off, they followed her, thinking that she was on her way to the tomb to weep there. Mary came to where Jesus was waiting and fell at his feet, saying, "Master, if you had only been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her sobbing and the Jews with her sobbing, a deep anger welled up within him. He said, "Where did you put him?" "Master, come and see," they said. Now Jesus wept. The Jews said, "Look how deeply he loved him." Others among them said, "Well, if he loved him so much, why didn't he do something to keep him from dying? After all, he opened the eyes of a blind man." Then Jesus, the anger again welling up within him, arrived at the tomb. It was a simple cave in the hillside with a slab of stone laid against it. Jesus said, "Remove the stone." The sister of the dead man, Martha, said, "Master, by this time there's a stench. He's been dead 4 days." Jesus looked her in the eye. "Didn't I tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" Then to the others, "Go ahead, take away the stone." They removed the stone. Jesus raised his eyes to heaven and prayed, "Father, I'm grateful that you have listened to me. I know you always do listen, but on account of this crowd standing here, I've spoken so that they might believe that you sent me." And then he shouted, "Lazarus, come out." And he came out, a cadaver wrapped from head to toe and with a kerchief over his face. Jesus told them, "Unwrap him and let them loose." I want to read you the next verse. That was a turnaround for many of the Jews who were there with Mary. They saw what Jesus did and believed in him. But some went back to the Pharisees and told on Jesus. I think there are some really interesting things in there in terms of a step for a hint for what it looks like to be a community of healing and renewal. And the thing is that I don't want us to see this story as, "Oh, well, that was okay for Jesus, that's what he did." I believe the call on us is actually to see the dead raised. That's the call. I've said that umpteen times, that a number of years ago when I was asking God, what is it? You know, people have dreams and it's like, this is what God has put me on earth for. And that used to frustrate the living daylights out of me, because people would say to me, you know, "What's your destiny? What are you really called to do?" And I'd be like, "I have no idea, I don't know." When I came here at first, the first Sunday that I was here after I started working here, Bob Johnson was preaching, and he asked people to stand who didn't know what the ultimate call in their life was. And I remember thinking, that's me. I got to my feet. And I think I was only one of about 3 or 4 people, and I'd just come to work here, and I'm thinking, "Oh, jings, okay, this is a good start, isn't it?" And it was true. I didn't really know what it was. And then a few years ago, I really felt God had spoken to me and said to me that actually the call in my life was to see the dead raised. Wherever the dead were, it was to see the dead raised. So if that was a dead church, it was to see a dead church raised. If that was relationships that were dead, it was to see those relationships raised. If that was dreams that were dead, it was to see those dreams come alive again. Wherever the dead were, then I would see them raised. And that has been true. We've seen that here. I've seen that here already since I've been ministering with you and you've been ministering with me. We've seen it. We've seen lives changed. We've seen things that looked as if they were dead come back to life again. And there is so much more in that. There is so much more. And eventually, I do believe we will see the physically dead raised. Why would we not? It's not any more difficult than it is for Jesus to resurrect a marriage or to whatever. It's not any more difficult for Jesus. So why would we not see that? I want to look at this passage, though, and I want to have a wee look through it at some of what jumped out at me at the points that I think speak to us about what it is to be a community of healing and renewal. The first thing is that Jesus didn't go immediately, and that's a puzzle, isn't it? That's a funny thing. Surely if you'd heard that your pal really wasn't well or your pal was dying, you would be there toot sweet. Surely you would do that. But Jesus doesn't go immediately. And I think he doesn't go immediately is because the reason he didn't go immediately is because he saw something that they didn't. You see, Jesus was so connected to the Father that Jesus could see what the Father saw. And so when Jesus made the call not to go, it was actually because God saw something. And Jesus was so connected to his Father that he saw something that nobody else saw. Jesus only did what he saw the Father doing. And you see, he could do things that we would maybe take a step back and think, man, I couldn't say that or I couldn't do that because we're not sure. Jesus could do it because in actual fact, his connection with the Father was so close that he didn't make a mistake in it. That's the place that he was working out of. He did what he saw the Father doing. He saw something that the rest of the guys didn't see. And if you look down towards verse 15, he says to them, you'll be given new ground. You're about to be given new grounds for believing. Some of the other translations talk about, translate that as, so you may believe. So this has happened, so you may believe. When they're questioning about, why are you not going just now? This is happening, so you may believe. The Message translates it as, you're about to be given new grounds for believing. And I think this is really important in this here, because you see, in the early church was fueled by what they had seen and experienced and not by what they understood or believed. The early church did believe, absolutely. I'm not suggesting that they didn't believe, but the fuel that got behind them was what they had seen and what they had experienced, what they had got firsthand. They weren't hanging about waiting on somebody coming and saying, this is my experience of. They experienced it firsthand, and that is what built faith. That's what gave them new grounds for believing, and Jesus knew that, and that's what was about to happen with this as well. When you kind of scan on in this passage and you look towards the end, the whole of the second half, verse 21 to 32, the whole of the second half of this passage, when Jesus gets to Bethany and when he raises Lazarus, the whole thing centers around the fact that it's actually all about Jesus. It's not about anything else. Nobody was doing anything smart. Nobody was creating the right conditions or anything else. It was all about Jesus. When you see Martha and Mary's reaction to Jesus, they fall at his feet. It's all about him. The attention is completely focused on him. And that's why we called this series Building on What Matters. That's why we called it Fuel, Building on What Matters, because actually it's all about him. That's what it is all about. Whether it's the centre of mission, the centre of creativity, whether it's the healing and renewal, whether it's the training and equipping, it's actually all about him. Yes, he gives us gifts and skills and talents, and we've got some really talented and skillful people around here in terms of what they do. But actually, if they only ever work out of what they do, they'll only get halfway, because it's all about Jesus. That's why we started off with the centre of prayer and worship, because it's right at the heart of what we do, and everything else has to flow from there. It's all about Jesus. I wonder if we take a look at verse 33. Verse 33 says this in this translation. When Jesus saw her sobbing and the Jews with her sobbing, a deep anger welled up within him. When I read this in the Message translation, that jarred with me, because I thought, dang, the deep anger, I don't remember reading that anywhere else before. And when I checked back and had a look at all the other translations, they all translate it slightly differently. The Message, and there's one or two of the other ones that translate it as anger, but sometimes it talks about him being deeply moved in his spirit. Sometimes the translations say deeply troubled. Some say sighing deeply and deeply disquieted. And one says, indignant in the spirit, which caused him to shudder. That's what one of the other translations say. So whatever was going on inside Jesus, this was actually deep and it was visceral. It wasn't here's something I need to do, so therefore I'm going to do it. There was something inside him that welled up within him. It actually affected his body. So that translation, indignant in the spirit and caused him to shudder. You know when you get to the place where there's something inside of you that's welling up in you, and sometimes it comes out as tears, and sometimes it comes out as or whatever, but whatever it is, it does something to your body. And that's what was going on with Jesus. There was something going on inside him, and then he wept. So the two things sit side by side with each other. There's a deep move inside Jesus. He's deeply moved by this, to the point of what this translation calls anger, and then he weeps, and then he raises Lazarus. And I think there's something really significant in there for us. And it started me thinking about why was Jesus moved to anger? Why was he angry? if that's what this was, why would you translate it as anger? And there's some of the commentators actually say that anger is a much more accurate translation of it, that somehow to understand what was going on, we've kind of softened it a bit with the translation, but anger is much more, much closer to what the original was. And so I started to think about this, and I wonder whether or not one of the things that was happening was what Jesus was feeling inside was a reaction to the grief of the sisters, that he actually felt their pain. Have you ever been there with somebody like that, where it's not been happening to you, but you felt it as if it was, and it moves you on the inside? It's that gut-wrenching thing that just twists your gut in two almost. And I wonder if Jesus was reacting to the grief of the sisters. I wonder too if perhaps Jesus was reacting to the hypocrisy of the Pharisees. So these guys had all turned up to hang out with Jesus' friends who were distraught. These are the guys who were plotting, most of them, to kill Jesus. So Jesus stands there and sees them crying and looking as if they're so full of compassion for what's going on, but he knows that what's inside isn't exactly what's on the outside. And so somewhere inside him, there's that righteous anger that bubbles up inside him that says, seriously, really, really? Have a look on the inside, because you're not marrying up what's on the outside with what's on the inside. And that really drew me up, because I started to think, how many times have I prayed for people where I've gone through the motions of praying? How many times have you prayed for people where you've gone through the motions of praying for them? Because actually it was the right thing to do, because that's what everybody expected you to do. But as for being moved on the inside, I haven't been moved on the inside. Maybe that's just me. Maybe you find something different. But there's times when I've prayed for people where I've done it because I've gone through the motions of it, because actually that's what was required of me, and that's what was going on with the Pharisees. And I wonder if Jesus' anger boiled in him, because that's not what he's looking for. He wants what's on the inside to line up with what's on the outside. And I wonder too if what was going on with Jesus was that he was reacting with righteous indignation, because this is not how it should be. So there is righteous indignation in the fact that Lazarus, he was cross. Jesus was cross. Jesus was indignant about the fact that Lazarus had died. Jesus was indignant about lots of things, and it came out in terms of what he did. And I was thinking this. I was thinking about righteous anger, and I was thinking about being indignant. And it's not right. It's not right that children should suffer and should die. That's not right. It's not right that we shouldn't have a cure for illnesses. It's not right that people suffer. It's not right that people die when they're 20 and 30. It's not right that they don't have an opportunity to have a full life. That's not right. And there's an indignant anger in that. There's an indignant, no, this is not right. I was thinking about the song, and it's going to go from me again. The song that's got the chorus, "We are defiant in your name." It's the Wren Collective song. It's like, I'll name that tune in. Thank you. More Than Conquerors. That's got the line, "We are defiant in your name." Do you know, I want to encourage you folks to be a bit more defiant in his name this morning. I want to encourage you not to settle for what the world says is okay, but to be a bit more defiant in his name. This is not right. This is not right that these things happen. It's not right that we've got people within our family here, within our faith family here. It's not right that we've got people who are struggling with emotional difficulties. It's not right that we've got people who are out of relationship with other people. It's not right that we've got people who are not being released into whatever it is that God has called them to, because the world has filled their heads so full of rubbish about who they are and what they can do, that they're actually paralyzed in terms of moving forward. That's not right. And it is about getting a bit more angry about it. Those of you who know me know I don't do anger very well, and I very rarely get angry. If I get angry, if you're around me when I get angry, you'll know all about it, because it really does go if I get angry about something. But it's true, this makes me really cross that we settle for it. We shouldn't be settling for it. Jesus didn't settle for the fact that Lazarus was dead and shrug his shoulders and say, "Oh dear, I missed it." He doesn't settle for it. He goes in and he contends for it. Because you see, I think God's speciality is bringing life out of glorious mess. That's what he does. So the glorious mess of Lazarus's tomb, which was probably not a very pleasant place to be, Jesus brought glorious life out of that. Life out of glorious mess. And that's the call and the vision for us as a community here. Life out of glorious mess. What does that look like? We don't have to go very far to find the glorious mess. Sometimes it's sitting right beside us, or actually it's sitting on the same seat that we're sitting on. The glorious mess is the thing that God longs to bring life out of. I think that at the end of the day, we are called to be a community of healing and renewal. This is not just for a few people who happen to be wired that way or think that way or are involved with this, that, and the next thing. We are called to be a community of healing and renewal. Wherever we go, healing and renewal should follow us. And we're not talking just about somebody's broken bones or somebody's diagnosed illness being healed. We're talking about healing in the broadest sense that we can imagine. So we're talking about healing in terms of our business practices. We're talking about healing in terms of our financial institutions. We're talking about healing in terms of our political system. We're talking about healing and renewal as a much bigger picture than praying, you know, God, will you take away the pain? It's much, much bigger than that, and that's what we're called to do. And it's as much about who we are as it is about what we do. I was saying to some of you over the last couple of weeks, I read an article that somebody was writing about, talking about how the body heals itself. And the whole idea is that if you cut your finger, given the right conditions, you don't need to do anything to make your finger heal. Your finger will naturally heal. If you take your finger, if it's cut into a place where there's dirt and there's grime and there's muck and all the rest of it, it will take much longer, or in fact could even hamper permanently the healing of that cut on your finger. So if you have got something in your body that's hurting and you create an environment round about it that's conducive to healing, it will heal itself. And that started me thinking, what would that be like if we could create that community here? What would happen if we could create a community that was conducive to healing and renewal, where when people came in, just because they were in the conditions that we had actually created along with God, that the conditions that were here were conditions that were conducive to healing, what would happen if people who were sick came into that? Would they just get healed? And then I started to think about the opposite. What happens if you invite people into a community that's toxic and they're not well? How does that affect them? And in actual fact, that's a real sobering thought. So what in our community here is actually toxic? What's not good to invite people into? Because that's the stuff we need to be getting angry about and we need to be going after. Because that's the stuff that God doesn't want here, because it hampers healing and it hampers renewal. So given the right conditions, the body has the capacity to heal itself. And I think the base condition for that for us is that we have Jesus at the centre, drawing us to the Father in the power of the Holy Spirit. Those are the conditions that we will create a place where we start to heal, actually because we're in relationship with the Godhead, because we're close to the Godhead. The thing is that it's only in this encounter that we can be truly equipped and released to be a community of healing and renewal. We can't do it any other way, because we'll run out of our own resources. It's only from that place of being, it's when your being is bigger than your doing, that you'll be equipped to do more doing. It's in that place of intimacy, it's in that place of connection. So you want to see the dead raised? Get closer to Jesus. You want to see the sick healed? Get closer to Jesus. You want to see lives transformed? Get closer to Jesus. You want to see transformation in your life or in the life of the community? Get closer to Jesus. You want to see people come to faith? Get closer to Jesus. The answer's the same regardless of what it is. That's where the power, that's where the equipping, and that's where the authority comes from. I was thinking too when I was reading the passage, because I was thinking about conditions that you could create that would foster healing, that started me off. And the quantum leap I made to that was, in terms of person-centred counselling, for those of you who know, a guy called Carl Rogers, who was the founder of person-centred counselling, Carl Rogers talked about how if you created the core conditions in a counselling session with somebody, they would heal themselves. Self-actualisation would come because they had the ability to work out themselves what they needed to do. And so he talks about creating core conditions. So it's not about the therapist being able to give smart answers or do good teaching or point to the right place. It's simply about being able to hold the person and create the core conditions. And so I thought, I wonder if the core conditions that he talked about are seen in this passage. And I think they are. So Roger's core conditions are congruence, empathy, and unconditional positive regard. They're the three core conditions. Congruence means that what's on the inside is also reflected in what's on the outside. We've talked about that already. That's what Jesus picked up with the Pharisees. He didn't like that what was on the inside didn't come out on the outside. We see congruence in Jesus. Jesus wept. So Jesus was moved on the inside, and what you saw on the outside was exactly the same as what was going on the inside. He was congruent. He wasn't trying to be one thing when in actual fact on the inside he was something else. Sometimes I think that I'm probably the worst person in the world to do pastoral work. Those of you who have ever come or sat in my room or I've had coffee with or whatever, you'll know that if you're telling me a story or if you're telling me about something that's going on with you that's actually very, very painful, 9 times out of 10 I will cry. I can't stop it, I can't do anything else, and I've stopped apologising for it because actually I feel what you feel, and I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, that's a real shame, that's awful. I'm going to be congruent. So if it's on the inside, it will come out on the outside. And that's what Jesus did. I want to ask you how congruent you are. How much of what's going on inside of you do you let anybody else see? Empathy. When we see in this passage, we see Jesus who was deeply moved. When he saw what was going on, when he saw the pain of the sisters, he was deeply moved by it. It wasn't his pain, it was their pain. But he could put himself into their shoes and feel what it was they were feeling. I wonder how your empathy is. The thing about empathy is a scary place to be, because when you don't sit at this side of the conversation, when you actually move round to this side of the conversation, then you start to feel what the other person feels. And you see, if you've got stuff that's not resolved, if you've got stuff that's not dealt with, if you've got stuff that you've not recognised about you, then when you start to feel somebody else's stuff, it pokes at your stuff as well. And sometimes that causes us to run a mile. So we don't want to feel anybody else's stuff because it pokes at ours as well. I want to suggest to you that if empathy is something that you struggle with, that you take some time to be silent and to be still and allow God to bring up in you whatever it is that's unresolved that causes you difficulty in terms of sitting with somebody else. And the last one is unconditional positive regard. That's just a fancy way of saying that Jesus always called out the gold, and that's what he calls us to do as well. Unconditional positive regard, regardless of who is sitting, who you're sitting with, who you're walking with, who you're talking to, who you're involved with, regardless of who they're a valuable human being because they're made in God's image, because he chose for them to be here, and because actually he's at work in their life, whether you or I see it or not. Unconditional positive regard is, I will love you in spite of, I love you regardless of. That's unconditional positive regard. Not with an ah, but if you can just get this bit sorted, or an ah, but I see this. Simply unconditional positive regard. I heard Sean Bolt speak a while ago where he was talking about prophetic words and talking about that you need no skill to point out people's faults. So you don't need any skill in the prophetic to be able to say, you know, God sees da-da-da-da and you need to fix that. He says there's no skill needed for that at all. What there is, real skill and connection with God that's needed to call out the gold in people. Because very often we pass that by. Very often it's hard for us to see that. And we get to that place of being able to call the gold out because we've spent time with the one who sees the gold. That's where we get the sustenance, where we're empowered, where we get the will and the energy and the drive to want to do that. So I want to leave you with a question. I want to ask you which of the core conditions you're going to work on this week. Which one is it? Is it congruence? Do you find it hard to let people see who you really are? Is it empathy? Do you find it hard to really get into somebody else's shoes? Or is it unconditional positive regard? Because as we start to work on this together, and the challenge and the invitation is to start working on it, as we start to do that, I believe that we will actually create something different, a different atmosphere in our community. And our community will become one of healing and renewal. Wouldn't it be amazing if people started to testify that they came here because the atmosphere was conducive to healing or the atmosphere was conducive to renewal? Wouldn't it be amazing if people came in the door here and went out into the cafe and said, I went in there and when I went in I was like this and now I've come back out and it's different? And of course it's not about them coming in here. Wouldn't it be great if you met people in the post office queue and after speaking to you there was healing and there was renewal, they left with hope? Wouldn't that be amazing? That's not about building a centre and staffing it with therapists. That's about a movement of people who will go on a flying below the radar mission to be able to see healing and transformation brought to a community. I think it's time to do a bit of undercover work. It's time to go and to not be in the enclave of this is the inner healing appointment or this is the healing rooms appointment. It's time to go and carry what you've got and what I've got out into there and watch it affect people. That's how movements work. That's how movements transform from the ground up. Let me pray for us. Father, I pray that you would continue to challenge us, that you would continue to challenge us about our part in terms of building a community of healing and renewal here. Father, I pray that if we're wondering at the moment just who you are in terms of being able to have that power and that authority, in terms of being able to be equipped to do this, Father, if that's us this morning, will you draw us to yourself through Jesus? Father, I pray for those of us in here this morning for whom this sounds like double dutch, because they've never experienced a relationship with you and they don't know the transforming power that comes in relationship with you. Father, I pray that right now, in this moment, you will touch them. That right now, in this moment, transformation would take place. That right now, in this moment, renewal would take place. And Father, I pray for all of us who have come in here this morning who have an overt sense of needing healing or renewal in an area of our life. Father, as we come towards the end of our service and as we worship you now, as we come to draw close to you again, as we sing to you, Father, will you come? Will you come and will you touch us? And in that holy moment, will you bring the healing and the renewal that we desperately want? So, Father, we give you the glory. We ask you to draw us closer to Jesus, to empower us, to transform us, so that we might see a community transformed. In Jesus' name, amen.